I know I'm glad that we serve a God who can take care of all that and more, and the hope that we have in Him. So, welcome to New Hope this morning. Bill and Bonnie are off just taking a couple days away, relaxing, getting some well-deserved time. I'm going to continue our call to action series. The first few weeks we talked about Noah and Abraham and Moses. Noah and Abraham called to do these things. Didn't really have a lot of answers to it. It was just kind of, hey, go and do this. There wasn't a lot of firm, concrete plans as to what they were going to do, but they trusted God and they went, and everything went as it should have been. You know, God told Noah, build an ark because there's going to be a flood. And Noah's probably thinking, what's a flood? What's that? We've never had one of those before. God told Abraham, get up and leave this land and go where I'm going to tell you. He didn't even tell him the destination at first. He says, I'll show you when it's time. And Abraham got up and left. And it worked out just like it was supposed to. They obeyed according to what we see in the scripture without really any questions. It just, okay. They got to work. They did what they needed to do. Even when it didn't make sense. Moses, he had more of a concrete task from the start. When God speaks to him out of the burning bush, he tells him, go and tell Pharaoh to let my people go, right? And Moses pushes back a little bit. He says, me? Like, you're sure you want me to do this? I'm the one you want to pick? What if they don't believe me, God? He lacked confidence in his own abilities to do what God called him to do. But God sent him Aaron, and he gave him a couple signs that he could do. It says, well, this is how you're going to prove that I'm the one who really sent you. All of these callings, they were very obvious and in your face. God speaks directly to Noah and Abraham. And the angel of the Lord speaks to Moses from the burning bush. But the person we're going to look at today never heard directly from God, at least as far as it's recorded in the scriptures. So Jacob had 12 sons, and the second youngest of those sons was named Joseph. And if you remember Jacob's story, he was married to both Rachel and her sister Leah. He wanted to marry Rachel, but their father tricked him into marrying Leah first, and then Rachel as well. And he loved Rachel more than Leah, but Leah was the one bearing most of his children. And then there were the two servants of his wives that also gave him some children. But Rachel was the one who gave birth to Joseph. He was the oldest child of the favorite wife of his father. So in Genesis 37, we see that start to show through and cause some issues between Joseph and his brothers. And it says in verse 3 that Israel, Jacob, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. Right? And he made him an ornate robe. And in verse 4 it says, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. And who can blame him? Right? It's one thing to argue with your siblings about who the favorite child is. Right? Any of you ever do that? No, of course not. None of you would. Right? I have with my brothers. I say I'm the favorite because I was the first one to move out. Right? That's why they like me the most. It's one thing to think that your parents favor one of the other children over you. But this example is recorded in the Bible. God makes it clear Joseph was the favorite. There was no question about it. It's biblical. It's not a debate between siblings. The Bible settles it. Joseph is the favorite. It caused some natural tension between the brothers. And Joseph has two different dreams. And they both communicate a similar message. Your family is going to bow down to you. Now, the Bible doesn't specify that this dream is from God. It doesn't say in the scriptures that God gave Joseph a dream. Joseph, it just tells the story of him telling his brothers and his father these dreams that he had, where the corn stalks are bowing down to him, and then the moon and the stars and the sun are bowing down to him. But I think that as Joseph's story unfolds, it becomes apparent that God was showing Joseph what his future held. But boy, he took a roundabout way to get there. It wasn't just a life of leisure all the way up, and Joseph just gets older and gets more power, and then all of a sudden here he is in the kingdom that he's ruling or whatever, and everybody's bowing down to him, and he says, yes, this is exactly what I pictured the whole way through. It's not like that at all, right? And in chapter 37 of Genesis, Joseph's brothers, they've had enough. They say, we're going to kill him. You know, as many issues as I've had with my brothers, that nothing like that has ever crossed my mind. But boy, they were mad. They see him coming from a long way off, and there's that dreamer. And they start hatching a plan, and they're going to kill him. And Reuben, the oldest brother, has some sense to him. He says, no, let's just throw him in a pit. And Reuben's plan is, I'm going to come back later, and I'm going to get him out, and everything's going to be okay. This will pass. But instead, the other brothers see some traitors coming along, and they sell Joseph to these traitors, and they go and convince their father that Joseph is dead. But in the midst of what looks like this terrible, dark place, when he is down in the pit, when he is betrayed by his brothers, when he's sold into slavery, the Lord did not leave Joseph. He was still there. Verse 2 of chapter 39, if we're skipping ahead just a little bit, it says that the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered while he was in the house of Potiphar as a slave. This Egyptian man that had Joseph as a slave gave him more and more responsibility, and he trusted him with everything because he noticed that when Joseph was in charge of something, it went well. Everything that Joseph took care of, it ran smoothly. God was blessing Joseph. But then Potiphar's wife comes in, and she decides she wants Joseph. Doesn't matter that she's married. Doesn't matter that it's not to Joseph. She sees him, she wants him, and she's going to do whatever she can to make that happen. And despite the fact that Joseph does absolutely no wrong, he runs away from her because he knows that it would be wrong to be with her. He ends up in jail because it's her word against his, and well, the slave isn't going to get the benefit of the doubt in that situation. And if you're in Joseph's shoes, you might have recalled those dreams from time to time and thought, now wait a minute, where's the part where they bow down to me? Because I haven't had any of that yet. God, I thought this is how it was going to be, but my brothers throw me into the pit, and then I got sold into slavery, and then things started going good again. And then this woman lies and gets me thrown in jail. What is going on? Why is everything going wrong? I'm my dad's favorite child. I'm getting preferential treatment. I'm getting all the nice stuff. And then I'm in the pit and sold into slavery. And then I work my way up in the home of Potiphar, and then I'm wrongfully accused and I'm thrown into jail. You know, Bill talked about how Abraham being asked to sacrifice Isaac foreshadowed what he would do with Jesus. And I think this is some more foreshadowing of what would happen to Jesus. Joseph found favor through the faithfulness of God. Jesus' ministry was thriving. People's lives were being changed left and right. But then he was unjustly accused of wrongdoing, and he was punished for it, even though he didn't deserve a thing, just like Joseph had been so many years before. And just like Jesus, the punishment that Joseph received, being thrown into prison, was part of God's plan. Joseph ends up in prison, and in verse 21 of Genesis 39, it says this, "The Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden." Joseph, again, he's in charge where he's at because of his faithfulness and the blessings of God. Joseph is climbing that ladder again. He's gotten knocked back down. He's in jail. But because of his faithfulness, because of the blessings of God, he's rising back up again. He gets to a position of relative success and respect and honor, even though he is still in jail. And then the cupbearer and the baker, the Pharaoh's officials, they are thrown in jail with Joseph. And because he's in charge and because he's been so respected, he's tasked with caring for them. And the two men each have a dream. They're very similar dreams. And they're both distressed over them. Like, we don't know what they mean. We know they mean something. We know that they're important, but we just can't figure them out. And Joseph says, I can help you. God has given me the ability to tell you, here's what this means. He says in verse 8 of chapter 40, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. All along, Joseph is giving credit to God. He doesn't say, I know. He says, God knows, and he has shown me, and I can tell you. Joseph isn't trying to take credit. He's not trying to be the one who receives any praise. He tells the cupbearer, well, your dream means you will be restored to your former position beside Pharaoh. And the baker's like, oh, great. And then he tells the baker, the news isn't so good for you. You're going to be killed. And he was. It happens just as Joseph said. And in that moment, Joseph may think that, okay, I've done this. I've performed this great thing that God has made me able to do. Maybe it's time for me to climb out of prison here. More good news is coming, right? Not yet. Verse 23 of Genesis 40 says, the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. And it might have felt to Joseph like God forgot him too. It might have felt to him like, I thought there was a plan. But here I am in prison. I'm still here. Chapter 41 opens up 2 years later. It's not like a couple days or weeks or even months. It is 2 years later before anything changes for Joseph. This time, Pharaoh has had a dream, and he needs someone to tell him what it means. And a light bulb goes off for the cupbearer, and he's, I know a guy. I can't believe I forgot. But Pharaoh, I know someone who can tell you what the dream means. And here comes Joseph's calling. Genesis chapter 41, verse 14, is Joseph's calling from God. It says, so Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. You might think, Andy, God didn't say anything. You're right. But I do believe that God called Joseph there. Because sometimes God's calling doesn't come directly from God. Sometimes God will use other people to call us to do something. And I know that for sure because the first time I ever considered going into ministry, it was because some adult leaders that were a part of my youth group Just ask me some questions. Andy, you ever thought about going into ministry? And the thought had never crossed my mind. But I believe now, and I was soon convinced after that, that God had prompted them to ask me that question so that I would begin to consider his plan for my life. He didn't speak to me directly, but he spoke to me through people that I could listen to and that I would hear and I would understand. It wasn't from a sermon or a quiet time reading my Bible or hours of prayer seeking God's direction for my life. It was from these adults who were pursuing Jesus with their whole lives and who knew me well and who saw something in me enough to call it out for me. They suggested, hey, ministry might be what God is calling you to. Pharaoh called Joseph out of prison, but I believe it was God using Pharaoh to get Joseph where he needed to be. Joseph is called in to interpret, and he nails it. He gets it exactly right. He does everything just right because God enabled him to do so. There's going to be 7 years of abundance followed by 7 years of famine. And Joseph credits God with helping him make these interpretations. Joseph credits God with the plan that would help Egypt navigate those 7 years of famine and help them become the dominant civilization in that region. They are the world power of that time because of the plan that God gave Joseph and Joseph helped carry out. He becomes basically the second most powerful person in Egypt, which basically makes him the second most powerful person in the world. Joseph is riding high again, and look who shows up in chapter 42. It's those good-for-nothing brothers that threw him into the pit. And this is where the human instinct is just saying, oh, they're going to get what's coming to them. This is time for Joseph to take his revenge. And he plays with them a little bit. It's been so long, it's been such a long time since they've seen him that they convinced themselves that Joseph is dead. They've forgotten all about him. They don't even recognize him as they come before him. And he kind of plays around with them a little bit. There's some back and forth, some cat and mouse going on. And Joseph helps his brothers. He helps his family. And eventually, in chapter 45, Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. Let's read verses 4 through 11. It says, "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come close to me.' When they had done so, he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve you for a remnant on earth, for you a remnant on earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and say to him, this is what your son Joseph says. God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Don't delay. You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me, you, your children and grandchildren, your flocks and herds and all you have. I will provide for you there because 5 years of famine are still to come. Otherwise, you and your household and all who belong to you will become destitute.' It's only 2 years into this 7 year famine that's coming, and they are desperate for help, and they come to the only place where they've got the extra food. And who's sitting on the throne but Joseph? And instead of taking the normal human route and saying, 'You guys get nothing. Do you remember how you treated me? I deserve to treat you the same.'" That's the world's way of looking at it. "Well, you did this to me, so I get to do that to you." But Joseph doesn't look at it that way. He says, "Guys, this was all part of God's plan. He can now see the big picture. They don't even know all the ups and downs that Joseph has been through, but he sees this is what God was working toward. This is what those dreams were all about. I am in this position of power because of God. Had it been another Egyptian, maybe they wouldn't have looked upon Israel and his family with the same compassion that Joseph had. Maybe they would have just told him, 'We'll give you a little bit and then you can go. Good luck to you.' But God put Joseph in just the right position at just the right time. God sent him there because God had a plan to help his people. Those promises that he had made to Abraham, that your descendants would outnumber the grains of sand on the seashore, the number of stars in the sky, this was a part of that plan. So what do we learn from Joseph in his life? What's our call to action? I think the first thing we need to understand is our call to action isn't always going to be obvious. God didn't speak to Joseph and tell him exactly what he was supposed to do. He was always with him. He was always guiding him through the different situations. But it was never like, Joseph, go and be in charge of Egypt. He got there eventually. He didn't audibly call Joseph like he did with Noah and Abraham and Moses, but does that mean he had any less of a purpose? Of course not. And nowadays, I don't think God is really in the business of audibly speaking to people. I'm not saying he can't, but I don't think that's typically how God operates anymore. He could verbally command us to do whatever he feels like. He's God. He could send an angel to give us a message or a dream that gives us something that we need to do. I'm not saying he doesn't, but I think that most typically God speaks to us through his word and through his people. That gives us the kind of clarity we need for our purpose. And God calls us to specific actions repeatedly, like go and make disciples and love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. But we have to read his word. We have to seek to understand how to apply it. And sometimes that call is going to come from an unexpected source. For Joseph, it was Pharaoh calling him out of prison to accomplish God's purpose. Sometimes people in your life will encourage you to do something that God has prepared for you to do. We have to be ready when that opportunity comes to answer the call. We have to know and be able to understand this is God's voice. It may come from my friend. It may come from a leader in the church. It may come from my spouse, my parent, my child, whatever. But I really believe that if we are in tune with God, if we are drawing close in relationship to him, we will recognize his voice even when it comes through someone else's mouth. Joseph had no direct call from God to do a certain thing, so what did he do? Well, he was faithful. And that's our second major lesson to learn from Joseph. Faithfulness is a calling. Throughout the different seasons of Joseph's life, God blessed what he was doing. He was in prison. He was faithful. He was working in Potiphar's house. He was faithful. He was second in command in Egypt. He was faithful. And all through it, God blessed him. It doesn't expressly say it, but have you ever seen God's blessing like that in the life of someone who wasn't faithful? It may look from the outside in that some people are being incredibly blessed by God, even though they are certainly not living faithfully. But I think you can see in all the other problems that crop up that they don't have all the blessings they think they have. It's kind of like the book of Esther. God's name isn't mentioned in the entire book, but his presence is everywhere. Joseph's faithfulness to the Lord isn't specifically mentioned, but it's everywhere in his story. He repeatedly gives credit to God for the things that he does, even telling his brothers, "It was God's plan to bring me here." After Joseph gave his plan to Pharaoh in chapter 41, Pharaoh says to his men, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" And then to Joseph he says, "Since God has made all this known to you, there was no one so discerning and wise to you." Pharaoh doesn't worship God, but he sees God in Joseph's life. Can people say the same about us? I hope so. If we live our lives faithfully in whatever we do, I believe people should be able to see God at work in us in the way that we live, in the life that we carry out. Our love for God should be reflected in our character and the way we do the things we do. So while God's call may not always be obvious in our lives, there is always the call to be faithful to him. And not because we are going to get something in reward here on earth. Because if Joseph had died in prison after being forgotten by the cupbearer, God would still be worth every bit of our praise. He would still be just as good. The parable of the talents that Bill referenced last week, it ends with those who were faithful to use what they had been given. They're commended with these words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." They're told, "Come and share in your master's happiness." That's the end result of our faithfulness. It may come here on this earth, but it may not. You could be faithful your entire life and still have struggle after struggle. But when we go to see Jesus, whether it's he comes back or we die and we get to meet him first, that's when the real reward comes. That is when we get to spend eternity with God in heaven through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. That's when it's all worth it. All the ups and the downs, the struggles, the back and forth. That's when it's worth it. The promise for those who believe is eternal life in heaven, made possible by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross and his resurrection from the dead. So what's God calling you to today? And who might he use to do it? If nothing else, I know that God is calling us all to have faith in him and to trust that he will do what he said he will do, just like he always has. We're going to sing a song of invitation today, and God might be calling you to something. Maybe it's through the encouragement of someone else. Maybe it's this thought that you can't get over your head of, maybe I should do this. Maybe it's something that you've read in the scriptures and you're convinced, you know, I've got to do something with this. Whatever it is, we want to offer you the opportunity to respond, whether that's to come and pray, whether that is to share some kind of public decision, whatever it is, we're going to stand and we're going to worship. And I pray that all of us will take action to be faithful to whatever it is God has called you to do, wherever you happen to be. Let's stand.